you're listening to Bikini Drive-In. Sarah Atnikoff joins me again today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me again.
I'm excited about the movie that we're going to talk to today.
Well, I feel pretty okay about it.
Yeah. Mediocre. Feel fine.
Yeah, I feel pretty okay.
Yeah. Bikini Drive-In's mission is to analyze horror and science fiction films through an intersectional feminist lens while combining elements of screen and media studies, arts criticism, and women gender studies. Since we will be discussing portrayals of horror and violence, content warning and listener discretion is advised, etc. Also, spoilers ahead. Today, we are discussing another vampire movie, Kathryn Bigelow's 1987 film, Near Dark.
I'm gonna separate your head from your shoulders.
Do it fast.
All right.
The times roll.
Woo!
No!
You might as well just kill me then, too.
Caleb Colton no longer belongs to our world.
We'll give him a week, see if we can call him one of us.
He belongs to hers.
But you have to learn to kill.
He belongs to theirs.
I don't want to kill.
He makes a kill tonight.
And they all belong to the night.
It's 3 hours short for a bus to get home. You help me out?
What are you on?
Believe me, I told you.
Just don't think of it as killing.
Evening.
Evening.
Don't think at all. It's just something that you do night after night. It's only ever a question of time.
You nervous? I would be too if I were you. Near Dark.
Could be your boys falling in with control.
Check out time.
Bought yourself some time, son.
God damn, this is my family. Let him go.
Pray for daylight. The night has its price.
Near Dark is a 1987 American neo-western horror film co-written and directed by Kathryn Bigelow. The plot follows a young man in a small Midwestern town who becomes involved with a family of nomadic American vampires after he's bitten by a beautiful drifter. Sarah, what is your history with Near Dark?
It's like the description of beautiful drifter.
Beautiful drifter.
Put that on my tombstone.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it until you suggested it, and I watched it last week. Mm-hmm. I felt like kind of meh about it. Like mm-hmm. I wasn't mad at it, and I didn't want my hour and a half back. But mm-hmm. I also wasn't like, oh my god, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I will say it was really nice to see fathers being so involved in their kids' lives. shout out to present fathers.
Yeah.
But I think, like, overall, it just didn't do it for me. Maybe it's Bill Paxton. Just the character that he played. I get it. Like, I get his character and stuff. I just kind of hated him. and I always see the, like, literal poop monster guy that he got turned into in Weird Science.
Yeah.
So it's not his fault. That's entirely me. Maybe it was that even though the vampire family was like alternative, it was still super heteronormative.
Yeah.
And I just always find that I want more for horror movies, but especially for vampire movies. Like, I just want them to be a little bit weirder. I want them to be a little bit queerer, because like, if you're gonna live forever, you don't need to make what you maybe grew up in.
Yeah.
There are things that I appreciated about it. I like the sort of country Mad Max feel.
Mm-hmm.
And the vampire has Via traveling in like a blacked out RV.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that. I like the neo-western genre. Like, I don't think that I've ever seen a movie like this before.
Yeah.
I like it because it seems to be a creative genre for this sort of story. I liked how quintessentially teenager it was of me to turn Caleb like 5 minutes after meeting him.
Yeah.
Like most horror movies, they lose me at the end.
Yeah.
The whole blood transfusion thing required me to suspend my disbelief more than I could. Like, there were some points where I was yelling at the TV where I was like, what? Like, are you a match? And I know that that's just me being silly, but mm-hmm. I mean, it just was like, it just sucked. It just, the ending was just so like pure and perfect.
Yeah.
And it just, like so many other vampire horror movies, it seems to suffer from the whole savior thing, and it just was kind of boring. But I also need to remember that, like, I'm looking at this in 2020 lens, and this is from 1987. So it would have been super cool to go see in the movie theater, and, like, it would have been, yeah, it would have been a super cool movie at the time. I think it still is. Mm-hmm. I'm not in love with it.
Yeah, there definitely are some sort of, like, dated elements to it. I would agree.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'd only seen Near Dark once before researching it for the show. It didn't really connect with me initially, mostly because of the love story between Caleb and May. But since researching and reading more and watching interviews, I've grown to really like it. I find the bad boy outlaw vampire family so charming. Bill Paxton, who, yeah, initially, he just, like, plays a lot of meatballs, but he is actually, like, so sweet and warm in interviews, and I feel like he, like, plays an asshole so well in this. So Bill Paxton, Lance Henriksen, and Jeanette Goldstein had worked together on Aliens the year prior, and I think that relationship and chemistry makes their family so special. Like, their dynamic is really interesting, and I find that, yeah, the scenes between the three of them are the most interesting to me.
Totally.
And yeah, like you mentioned, it's just, like, a creative way to tell a vampire story, even if the ending is kind of, like, wholesome. There's, like, certain sequences that I really like, so, like, the scene where the sunlight is shooting through the bullet holes, I just find it very imaginative.
It's really cool.
Yeah, and, like, such a creative way to show how harmful the sunlight is to them.
I
listened to two podcasts while researching this movie, so Switchblade Sisters by April Wolf and Someone Else's Movie by Norm Wilner. So if you want to hear more on this movie, I highly recommend these podcasts. They're really great. Near Dark was Kathryn Bigelow's first solo feature. She also directed The Loveless in 1981, which stars Willem Dafoe, as an ode to biker movies. And I find that her movies are always very masculine.
Yeah.
And kind of and focus on, like, these very macho subcultures, which maybe is, like, why they don't always pull me in.
I looked up what movies that she has done, and, like, I've seen The Hurt Locker, which I really like, and she did that Zero Dark 31 about killing Osama bin Laden, and then she also did Detroit, which I thought was, like, the subject matter was super important and really interesting, but I don't think that it was entirely successful, but it just is so interesting to me that she can, like, you know, go from a movie like Near Dark to doing, like, The Hurt Locker.
Or Point
and it's
Break.
So okay. Interesting to me as a female director that she's doing these, like, war movies.
Yeah.
That is just, and there's nothing saying that, you know, it has to be a specific type of person, but, like, just, like, I'm so curious as to what drew her to those sorts of topics.
Totally. And yeah, it seems like because her films are focused on these very, like, masculine subcultures and communities and areas, it's like the women characters are locked in this in worlds that are dominated by men. So in a lot of ways, Near Dark feels a little dated because May and even Diamondback, played by Jeanette Goldstein, like, they aren't really given much to do.
No, they're just sort of there as vehicles for the male characters.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm not sure if that's the time or Kathryn Bigelow's point of view. And
I think it's maybe just, like, a victim of the time, May and Diamondback's characters. Yeah. And I mean, that hasn't stopped. There's still characters like that. But they did totally feel like they were just there to sort of further or give opportunities to the male characters to sort of develop or showcase their personalities.
Totally.
Over, like, them being able to do the same.
They also don't interact very much. If at all, like, I can't remember, like, do they actually ever speak to each other?
I think maybe, like, in the RV, maybe, when she first, like, brings Caleb aboard and they're just kind of giving him the gears about everything. Maybe. But, yeah, they don't, like, there isn't, I mean, like, maybe there's that weird, like, mother-daughter dynamic like, non-actual mother, like, I don't think that they're actually mother and daughter. So there's that, like, pretty younger girl versus a pretty older, quote-unquote, woman, and, like, that sort of dynamic. I never really thought about that.
Yeah.
But that's definitely, like, a possibility.
Totally. Here's a fun fact. I don't know if it's very fun. It's kind of nauseating. So this film marked Kathryn Bigelow's first solo directorial effort. And the film's producer, Edward S. Feldman, told her that if she couldn't handle or didn't know what she was doing while filming after 5 days, she would be replaced. Which is like such a classic move of like male producers and filmmakers only giving chances to people, aka like other men that remind them of themselves, or just like taking chances and taking male filmmakers just more seriously in general.
Yeah. Also, during this time, she was married to James Cameron.
So no, they got married after.
All the awards. What?
They got married after. I think they were, like, dating.
Well, they were, like, in courtship or something. She was going to get married.
Yeah.
She was going to make a terrible life decision.
Oh, there was also this, like, myth or story that it was James Cameron that brought the script, the Near Dark script, to the cast of Aliens, but it was actually Bill Paxton who first discovered it or found it.
Yeah.
And then he brought it to Lance Henriksen and Jeanette Goldstein.
So
I just refuse to give James Cameron credit for anything.
No, he gets zero credit for anything.
So yeah, I just want to talk a little bit about Western genre, which I'm admittedly like not familiar with at all.
Yeah.
So Western is a genre of fiction set primarily in the latter half of the 19th century in the Western United States, which is styled as the Old West. Its stories commonly center on the life of a nomadic cowboy or gunfighter. Many Westerns use a stock of plot of depicting a crime, then showing the pursuit of the wrongdoer, ending in revenge and retribution, which is often dispensed through a shootout or quick-draw duel. Westerns often stress the harshness of the wilderness and frequently set the action in an arid, desolate landscape of deserts and mountains. Often the vast landscape plays an important role, and I feel like this is seen in the sort of painterly quality of Near Dark. And the director of photography and cinematographer was Adam Greenberg, who also did the cinematography for Terminator. And I find that, like, the first shot of May, how, like, the neon was reflecting off of, like, the wet sidewalk, it's, like, very beautiful. But it is very similar to Terminator in that way.
Yeah. I didn't know that, and now that you say that, I can totally see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure I've watched Westerns before, but it's not a genre that I'm, you know, automatically drawn to or super familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
But I do appreciate in this movie sort of like the use of the genre as highlighting the difficulties and like how tough it is, I guess, to be a vampire. Like if you're in a metropolitan city like New York or, you know, somewhere, then it wouldn't be super hard to find people to eat. But I think that just like putting these folks out in, you know, middle America farmland somewhere sort of just like highlights and sort of like wilds them a bit more, I think, in like their predatory tendencies of like how they have to, like, you know, kill a whole bunch of people to survive and how they can, like, when they go into that bar and basically just like kill everybody very, very blatantly. It's a bit more like animalistic than other vampire movies that I've seen, where it's done sort of in shadows and very subtly, and they have to like learn and adapt. It's like here it's just like the Wild West basically of like shoot 'em up, or, you know, like whoever is the best, whoever is superior wins.
Totally. So Westerns are also morality tales. So wrongs are righted, order is restored, and then the damsel is rescued. And I feel like Near Dark does follow that similar sort of plot structure. There's also like themes of codes of honor. So the family, the vampire family, they have their own moral codes, and that they don't immediately kill Caleb, even though he's a liability for their way of life and basically like just another mouth to feed. But because he is a vampire, he has been turned, they do take him in.
Yeah.
Which I just think is very interesting. And also, just like their sort of responsibility that they seem to have to each other, or Jesse seems to have to Diamondback, and Diamondback has towards Homer.
Homer.
Yeah. We'll get to Homer.
What a weird character. Yeah, there is very much. And, like, when Jesse was talking about, like, when he was, like, how Caleb was asking how old he is, mm-hmm. and, like, he was like, oh, well, like, I fought in the war, and, like, our side lost, yeah. being, like, he fought in, like, the Civil War, and he was a Confederate soldier,
yeah.
and so, like, just that sort of also highlighting, like, the, like, when we think about, like, that time, it's, like, so genteel and so mm-hmm. proper and stuff, and he still is sort of maintaining that, and, like,
yeah.
who knows how long they've been together, like, as a unit, like, you know what I mean? But there mm-hmm. is a very strong family bond or
yeah.
family, like, they're
dynamic.
All sort of enmeshed together.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, just to go to mention, like, the Western ending, which we kind of touched on. So yeah, so order's restored, May and Caleb are cured, and they live happily ever after. So apparently there's this, like, alternate ending. I heard this on the podcast called Someone Else's Movie, but I wasn't able to track down any more info, so this might be, like, complete slander. But according to this podcast, the alternate ending featured Caleb's little sister walking to the sun and burning, meaning that Homer had turned her into a vampire before he died. So I feel like that is, like, the darker, more nihilistic, and, like, better ending.
I want that ending.
Yeah. But it's a Western, so...
Romance, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like, I mean, yes, it's a Western.
Mm.
It's from 1987. Like, and it's just like a lot of other horror movies too, where it just ends up with, like, the quote unquote good guys win.
Mm, yeah.
So, like, Caleb's super dedicated father
mm-hmm.
and sister come and save him and, like, you know, go and suffer so much to bring him back into their family, and then, you know, like, oh, his girlfriend that, like, they've never met.
Yeah.
And they, like, you know, and he needs to save her.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, but, yeah, that's the thing that bugs me so much, I think, about this, is, like, I had no idea that there was maybe a potentially other
mm-hmm.
ending, and, like, that, I was, like, that's the movie, that's how I want it to end. And
yeah.
it wouldn't, like, it's not, like, it's not sad, it's not wrong, it's not whatever,
it's just
more,
like,
interesting.
Safe. Yeah.
And it's just, like, probably what would happen, because,
yeah.
like, Homer's a little dude, and he would have worked quick.
Yeah.
And, like, little Sarah, they're all named Sarah, too, but anyways, little Sarah didn't stand a chance. I mean,
yeah.
she was super sassy, which I really liked, but, yeah, I just,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, I just am tired of movies that have that kind of ending, but also this is... this is an early one,
yeah,
so, like, it's
totally.
Not its fault that
yeah.
it ends in that way.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, just to touch on vampire mythology a little bit. Near Dark reimagines vampire lore. There's no crosses, there's no garlic. The word vampire is not used. Similar to Ganjen Hess, which we talked about last time, vampirism is framed kind of like addiction. And compared to classic portrayals of vampire, so Interview with the Vampire, Dracula, Near Dark emphasizes urgency and vulnerability, criminality, and survival. And I feel like what you mentioned
yeah.
earlier, the sort of teenager feel, that's also, like, there's a sense of urgency to them, like, getting together. And, like,
yeah.
it's in that sort of romance in the urgency.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this movie actually, like, shows the shitty parts of living forever, even though
yeah.
it's, like, yeah, they're immortal, but there is this, like, sense of urgency and, like, panic, and, like, they're living a really rough life, like, on the margins,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, like, they're immortal in the Midwest, in the
yeah.
U.S.,
yeah.
in, like, you know, a Dust Bowl-esque farming town,
mm-hmm.
and having to, like, travel at night and travel in an RV,
mm-hmm.
and, like, the things that they do are out of necessity, but the
mm-hmm.
things that they do and their sort of grandiose nature make them targets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they're always, like, they're having to survive, but the ways that they're having to survive are drawing so much attention to them
mm-hmm.
that, like, they can't ever settle. And I
yeah.
mean, I didn't get the impression that they would, like, want to settle down
totally,
somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, I
yeah.
think that it's probably just, like, this is how we live. It's always been like this.
Mm-hmm.
We go from, like, town to town. We find different, you know, busted out vehicles,
mm.
we hide out in hotel rooms, and we do this, and it's like, I feel like that sort of is a in a way, a romanticized way of looking at things. Like, even though it does look super crappy, I think it is still sort of like a romanticized way of like, we're in this together. And
yeah, it's like the outlaw, like a romantic.
Yeah, it's like, it's like they're sort of drawn together and they're in this family unit because it probably is easier to survive like as a pack than it is as an individual.
Right.
It is still sort of that glamorized, like, oh, we're on the run. We're just looking out for ourselves. Like, we have each other and that's it. And that, I feel, is like is a theme that in a lot of, like, in vampire movies runs, is like a common thread.
So I have a quote here from an article, an article called Sunlight Through Bullet Holes, Catherine Bigelow's Near Dark is Just as Revealing 30 Years Later by Tammy Oler. For all their freedom and near indestructibility, the vampires in Near Dark are barely scraping by. Cosigned to the margins, always hungry and living hand to mouth. They are a monstrous embodiment of poverty. In most vampire films, hunting for food often involves mystery and seduction. In Near Dark, it mostly means exploiting the kindness of others. When Near Dark hit theaters, American politics, media, and pop culture were preoccupied with demonizing urban poverty. Conservative politicians raised the specter of welfare queens and crack babies to point to the decline of urban families. Media overrepresented black Americans in depictions of poverty. Films ranging from Lean on Me to RoboCop to Colors portrayed inner cities as dangerous, gang-ridden hells. All of this exploited and contributed to fears that poor people of color in urban cities were leeching off hard-working, tax-paying whites in middle America. Pretty Near Dark imagined that America's real vampires were poor Southern whites who saw themselves as the losing side of American history. Near Dark tapped into those below-the-surface fears that poverty and decline could harm whites in middle America, and that the infected are all the more monstrous because they don't look like what you expect. I just thought that was such an interesting way to frame.
It's an interesting take on it.
I think that
other parts of that article drew parallels to like the current situation too. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting take on it. It wasn't one that I necessarily like got from it, but I do like, I appreciate it because this author is somebody like lives in the States and is looking at it sort of through that lens. And I think it's cool that they were able to sort of break it down and talk about it. Cause there are a lot of really salient points there about them living on the fringes and living hand to mouth and that. So yeah, that's an interesting.
Yeah, and just like the one scene where Jesse, admits to fighting for the Confederate Army, which is like, what are you hanging on to? Right. What is your What are your politics?
And like your rat tail.
Yeah.
Why do you still have that? But
it's also interesting.
And that's the thing too. It's like that he brings it up kind of with this like half joking, like
smirk.
But also you can tell that he's like, like we lost.
Yeah. And the same time, like the family is all white.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And like, that's a, you know, and I mean, if we look at it sort of like through that, like through the lens of this, of the quote that you just read from the article, it's like, like white trash kind of thing. Like it's very much like poor farming rural white people.
A little bit more on Jesse. So he's like the patriarch, the decision maker of the family. Is just seemed like this very brutal person, but at the same time he is like this caregiver and provider of the family, like another present dad, just like a bit more brutal about it. And then we have Severin, played by Bill Paxton, who I love, who's just like vicious and cruel and just like unchecked white male aggression, but I find him so fun to watch.
I
usually hate that type of character, but for some reason I find it like so charming and so fun.
I did not I wanted him, I just thought he was like too goofy in some weird way, like I think I wanted him to be meaner and I wanted him to be like just worse. And I just always, I don't know if it's like, and this is, you know, again, like a totally me thing, but like, I don't know if it's just like his face or like something, but I just wanted him to be meaner or crappier or something. Like
maybe like the reason I find him so charming is that Severin like loves being a vampire. Like, yeah, he's having
fun. Yeah,
I
love
fun.
That, too. Yeah. Like, I love that. I love that for Severin. Like, yeah. I love that he loves being a vampire. I just, yeah. like...
Love that.
And I love that he, like, doesn't care.
Yeah.
But I also just, like... I think I wanted him to be, like, meaner, maybe.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just because it's, like, Bill Paxton and, like, other things that I've seen him in. You're a bad guy. But yeah. there's always, like, a goofy
yeah.
uncle vibe yeah. Yeah. in a way. I don't know.
I have another quote from that article by Tammy Oler. Severin is the pathological result of what happens when a tough guy feels bulletproof because he is bulletproof. And yeah, and then Homer is such a conflicting, weird character because it's, like, so tragic. Like, the idea of, like, a child vampire is, like, so tragic, creepy, but also, like, very subversive because he's, like,
yeah.
like a gross kid. And then you see him, like, on fire and explode.
Yeah.
And, like, and I feel like this character is supposed to make the viewer...
Like, I look like a kid... But, like, I'm old or whatever. Yeah. And I just think that would suck.
That would suck
so
bad.
It would suck to be, of all of them, like, mm-hmm. that would suck. It would suck to be him for, yeah. for sure.
And, yeah, and I feel like that character is supposed to make the viewer uncomfortable because he's, like,
mm.
because he's in a child's body, but he is, like, this older man.
Yeah.
He, like, does have desires. And, but, it, yeah, is just stuck in this, like, in the, yeah, this juvenile spot. Like,
yeah.
yeah so. Well,
and even how he, like... You know, he's the one that utilizes his Diamondback can use her, like, feminine wiles. And
yeah.
Jesse can, like, use his just, like, root whatever. And
mm-hmm.
same with Severin. But, like, the things that he uses to get people is, like, I'm a little kid. And,
mm-hmm.
like, that is super uncomfortable. Like, when
yeah.
that guy stops to help them. And
yeah.
then he, that's how he, like, kills them.
That's
and it's
cool.
like, oh. like, it's like, you know, we don't want to think about a kid being a vampire and
yeah.
using... Like, and having to do things to survive like that.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, his, it's similar to May, who has to use, like, tenderness
innocence.
And innocence to, like, lure
yeah.
people. Yeah. But yeah, then we have Caleb, who doesn't feel like the hero of the story to
no.
me. And it's, like, he's kind of the damsel in distress. Like, there are a lot of times where May has to rescue him. May also rescues Sarah, the little sister, at
yeah.
the end. I don't know, maybe it's just, like, the actor doesn't work for me, or that character, or, like...
I think it was him.
Yeah.
Like, I think that that character had a lot of potential, because, I mean, it is basically, like, his existential crisis that, like, drives the movie, pretty much,
yeah.
you know? But, like, he just kind of seemed really sucky.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's, like, because Bill Paxton, Lance Henriksen, and Jeanette Goldstein had worked together before, and
mm-hmm.
just, like, were maybe, like, more experienced actors,
mm,
and
already yeah.
had chemistry, that they... Again, like, their scenes were just more interesting to me.
Yeah.
And so, like, to even act along with them, I think, would be very difficult.
I think so, too. It would be difficult to come into that situation with
mm-hmm.
folks. Because they had, like, literally just
mm-hmm.
wrapped up. Like, it was, you know, maybe, like, a year or something
yeah.
before.
Yeah.
And so that was still super fresh.
Yeah. And May, too. And, yeah, she... I'm not sure if she's, like, if it's her acting style or if she's not really given much to do. But yeah, it's like May and Diamondback are equal to the men in the vampire family, but they're clearly existing in this world that's dominated by men. It's clearly like Jesse's family. Jesse's in charge. Stylistically, I really like it, and there are definitely like sequences that I really like in this movie, but there's just like, yes, parts of it just feel like very 1987.
Yeah. I just, like, again, I just feel like I wanted more.
Yeah.
But it's not Catherine Bigelow's fault.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah,
never
I think
Catherine
it's
Bigelow's
yeah, it's
fault.
Great in a lot of ways. And yes, yeah, very formative and very like important. And so yeah, so that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Sarah, for watching this movie with me and for participating in Vampire Month.
Thank you for asking me. and thank you for exposing me to the whole world of vampire
yeah,
movies.
Full range.
A whole world.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can listen to Bikini Drive-In every Sunday at 4:30 on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Also on Apple Podcasts and iTunes and Spotify. Follow me on Twitter, Bikini Drive-In, Facebook page, all the things. So if you have suggestions or questions or want to keep talking about Near Dark, it's also very hard to find, unfortunately. They should get a Criterion release, you cowards.
No one knows how. the better you give me fever. When you kiss me, fever when you hold me tight. Fever!
CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Our frequency celebrates diversity.